Welcome to For the Record, an unfiltered view on current trends and timeless advice for surviving in the aesthetics industry. Whether you're an injector, practice owner, sales rep, or marketer, it's time to set the record straight. Each week, we cut through the chaos and showcase diverse perspectives and winning ideas from the best minds in the industry. I'm your host, Dr. Tiffany Hall, Chief Growth Officer at Aesthetic Record. Now, let's get started on this week's episode.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of For the Record. And today we're going to take a bite out of the Big Apple. We're coming to you not live from Manhattan, but almost from Manhattan live. I think it's Central Park South area with Dr. Lana Chuck, who is a board certified urologic surgeon. She's also a celebrity injector with her celebrity facelift. And she's the owner of Dr. Lana Aesthetics in Manhattan and also Face Med Training, where she provides tons of training, I think almost every week for providers. And also Face Med Store, which is like a marketplace for tons of awesome things that you guys need as providers in your practices. And she has a interesting background, so interesting, I can't wait to dive into all of it. She's a great business person. She's a first generation Chinese immigrant and just has some crazy stories about her life as a physician and making the move to aesthetics. And Dr. Lana, I cannot wait to have you on the show today. Welcome to For the Record.
Thank you so much, Dr. Tiffany. I'm so excited to be on. We met just recently and we connected instantly. And I'm so glad to be able to tell my story and just to talk with you.
Yeah, we had you in our little mini podcast booth at AN. And I was like, you know what? You got too much going on, sister. We got to have a full hour for you because your background is just, it's so interesting. Just the things about you being female and what you went through as a surgeon and coming into aesthetics and children and just all motherhood, all the things. And so I want to unpack all of it. But I think for our listeners, urology is not an obvious choice for aesthetics. It is if you know kind of what you're into, the whole sexual wellness, that whole revolution. So give us an idea of where you started from and how you got here with us.
Absolutely. So as you said, I am a board certified urologic surgeon. All my life, I've wanted to become a doctor just because my parents always wanted me to become a doctor and they never had an education and they were forced to work on the rice fields. And so, you know, emigrating to America and kind of risking their lives for their future children, I never took any opportunity for education for granted. And so becoming a doctor was my thing. And I was like, okay, I'm going to make my parents proud. Then I learned about urology, just kind of being, you know, a receptionist. It's so funny. The story quickly is that I saw an ad in the Penny Saver. You guys may not even know what that is because I'm super old, but they were looking for a receptionist. And I was like, oh, you know, I'm going to medical school. I'm going to, you know, become a doctor. So let me go ahead and apply for this. So I applied for it and they did not give me the receptionist job. They gave it to a girl that I actually tutored chemistry. But that's okay because I probably wasn't well suited for the receptionist job. So I became a medical assistant. They liked me so much, they called me back. And I worked for like 9 urologists. And I'm like, this is great. This is what I want to become. Not knowing that urology was so hard to get in. Only like the top like 1% of people that graduate med school actually can get into urology. So I did that. And I did that for about 10 years. And I loved it. And I was the first generation to do robotics because the robot was FDA approved. The Da Vinci robot was FDA approved in 2006. So I loved the robot. It was sexy. It was like new. It was exciting. And I'm like, I can use my hands and my skill to do something, you know, where the patient's not right here in front of me, but, you know, to the side. And I can do that and I could save lives and, you know, I could take out cancers and everything. So really, really exciting stuff. And then I can get into my story of how I pivot to aesthetics.
Well, I want to stop right there for a second, though, because robotics to me is fascinating. You know, it's been in medicine now, as you mentioned, 2006. It's kind of come a long way. But you're one of the first people to ever do it, I think, to really lead a team to do that, to be, you know, part of this whole movement. So it speaks to your love of innovation, obviously. But, you know, picture this or give me the insight. You're in the OR. You know, you're a fresh baby surgeon coming out. And now you're like, hey, here's a robot. Let's get started. What goes through your mind in that? Because I feel like however you adapt to that change dictates how you adapt to all change and what comes next. So what was it like in those early days?
It was great because I'll tell you, with any innovation, with anything that's new, if you're at the right place at the right time, baby girl, you're going to do the things that you're meant to do, right? And you're just going to excel. So what I did was I was actually a resident at that time. And we were all learning on the robot at the same time, doing prostate cancer, doing radical cystoprostatectomies, like just everything, right? And all the things. And because my attendings were a little bit older, right? We all know that, you know, the younger generation are great with their hands. You know, we grew up with generation of like Nintendo and like Xbox. And so I was always really good with my hands. So I was actually the one that was sitting on the robot doing the case from skin to skin. And my attendings were kind of like learning from us because we, you know, were the ones that were doing all these cases with like the 20 attendings that we had. So we actually got really good. I mean, by the time I graduated from, you know, Brown University, I was involved with over 600 radical prostate surgeries and kidney surgeries. So, you know, I was just at the right place at the right time. And, you know, I was a go-getter and I was like, I can do this. And so they appreciated that. And because I actually had probably more hands-on than they did, because again, they were doing one or two cases per week, but I was doing six cases per week because I was in with all, you know, the attending urologists. So I think it was just, you know, being in the right place at the right time and really good with my hands. I love being technical. I love, you know, anything technological. I thought it was really, really cool. And I just happened to fall in love with it and become the 1% of minority women in robotic urology once I graduated in 2010. So that was really exciting.
Yeah, I mean, you're a pioneer. I think about, you know, when we met in Anesthetic Next, you mentioned being, you know, a first generation Chinese American born, you know, your parents have migrated here from, you know, some really hard times in China. Sort of your whole growing up was, you know, a lot of adversity. And then you end up at Brown, you know, it's like, what a transition there, like to prove that anyone, you know, if you're smart enough, you work hard enough, you can do it. Like there is a pathway there. But to go from that to like the 1%, I think is just shocking. I mean, it's incredible. But, you know, I think about that too, as a female, you know, before we even get into aesthetics, as a female in that moment, also being obviously, you know, a minority, how did that work in a hospital setting? Because, you know, I've never been a person that had to deal with being a female kind of put me out of the race or impacting my paycheck. I don't know, I'm like a bull in a freaking China cabinet, probably, Dr. Lana, who knows? But I know in medicine, it's very different. Despite all the oversight from, you know, the FDA and Sunshine Act, they still have major pay gaps. So what was your experience with that? And how did you take sort of that lesson? And did that turn into you coming into aesthetics because of what you were facing in the hospital?
Oh my gosh, good questions. I would love to kind of dive into this. You know, growing up, I grew up very, very poor. My parents emigrated here with $6 in their pocket and lived the American dream. I grew up in the projects of Chinatown. And I know growing up, I didn't have much. And so I knew that I really had to utilize my education and just leverage everything that I had, you know, to get into the field. Little did I know how tough it would be to get into the field and to also succeed in the field. I kind of had blinders on, right? You just kind of go, go, go. And you don't look back at all the PTSD, all the trauma that we endured. But let me tell you, when I did my training and my residency, it was very, very hard. I feel like I still had to work three times as hard as my male counterparts just to even be noticed. And let me tell you, as a urologic surgeon, it is so hard to go through residency knowing that you're not supposed to want to eat, you're not supposed to want to sleep, you're not supposed to ever want to use the bathroom. You just go, go, go. So all my life, I was conditioned to be a multitasker, to go, 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 to never make any waves, to just look straight ahead, to never question anything, and not even want to receive any praise. It was always do everything that you can, work 120 hours, and then try not to get into trouble. So that was my goal throughout residency, was keep my head down, not to be noticed, and not to make any waves, because those were the problem people. When you made waves in residency, so you just want to do your work, do good work, and just get out of there alive. And that's how I felt like my training was.
Well, and then how does that manifest to a paycheck? Because I feel like that's, you know, you look at people like yourself, you're a 1%er, you know, probably in many ways now, but even like, you know, plastic surgery, dermatology, these like really, you know, neurology, cardiology, these high upper echelon specialties. We wonder why people are coming to aesthetics. I think the pay gap is a big part of it, right? We're a very female heavy industry, and this industry being female is primarily an advantage in most cases. But I think in the hospital, it's not. And so at what point did you like wake up one day and realize, oh my gosh, I'm getting completely just, you know, bamboozled with the paycheck situation and I've got to go? Because obviously, you know, then comes children and families and all these things long term. It's like, wait a minute, I can't work three times as hard for half the money with the life I want to live. And so, you know, how does that impact you after all that work and all those years to make that decision? Because I feel like it has to be heart-wrenching.
Oh, completely heart-wrenching. I remember when I found out that my male counterparts made six figures more than I did. And it hurt, it stung, because I know how hard I worked. I know I never took a vacation in the 5 years that I was there. I would give all my patients my cell phone number, not only my patients, but their family. You know, I really went above and beyond and gave that level of care that I don't think anybody else gave. In addition, I took care of all the sick patients. You know, I felt like some of the men, I'm not going to say all, some of the men in my program were able to cherry pick their patients. They picked, you know, the most healthiest, most robust patient with small tumors. But I got all the difficult patients that were in nursing homes, had multiple infections, multiple comorbidities. So I knew that I took care of that population that nobody wanted to take care of. And I got really good results, meaning that they did well. There was minimal mortality, morbidity, or no mortalities. And still, I felt like even when I found out that, you know, I made six figures less, my initial gut was not, hey, I'm going to leave. My initial gut was, let me fight. Let me ask. Let me have them know my worth. And when I did that, I asked the administration if I can get more money. And they said, if you can show me that you're worth more than what I'm paying you, then I'll consider it. I said, okay, great. Like, they're giving me a chance. This is great. Let me go out there. Let me show what I'm worth. And within 1 month, I got a letter in my hand, an offer letter, to say that they are offering me a job in academics as the program residency director of urology at a very prominent New York City program, which is great. And academia, like, that's what you want to strive for, right? To be program director for the residency program. And they paid a lot more than what I was making, 30% more. And I showed it to him thinking that he was going to say, wow, that's very impressive. But he didn't. He said, I'm not going to pay you this much. It's best that you take this job and you leave. That was when everything clicked for me. And I knew that they did not see my value. I knew they did not see my worth. In addition, the fellow that I trained in robotics, they were offering him $75,000 more to start when I was the one that trained him. So I knew that my time there was limited. And I had already had a baby at that time, but I was pregnant with my second child. And I said, you know what? I need to start doing things for myself. If they're not going to give me the money, then I'm going to look elsewhere and try to make money on my own. And then I fell in love with aesthetics. My father owns a big day spa in the city in Chinatown. It's actually Tribeca. And I just said, you know what? Let me just try. And that's what I did. And everything was going well. And I got the okay from my chairman. Sure. If you want to make money another way, as long as it doesn't interfere with what you're doing with us in the hospital, great. But when I started getting bigger, when people started noticing what I was doing, people started talking, he pulled me aside and said, it's the perception of what you're doing outside of urology. Meanwhile, the men in my program all had, you know, all these great bonuses. They had all these other jobs. They were like witnesses, you know, expert witnesses in trial. And so everybody had a second job, but because my second job was aesthetics, and they looked down on that. And they didn't think that that was something they wanted to be affiliated with. They called me into the HR department and they told me the three words that nobody ever wants to hear, which is, you're getting fired. At 8 months pregnant is when they actually pulled the trigger to fire me.
Well, I look at that now and think, how many of those guys who were still doing urology are looking at you thinking, holy shit, she was a smart one of all of us. She got out and, you know, lifestyle by design, you know, you get to kind of pick and choose what endeavors you do now, your schedule, how you set your practice up. I mean, the name on the door is yours. I mean, there's so many other things. You know, I look at things in my life very similarly of, like, I had some pretty big crossroad moments in my life. And thank gosh, I'm glad it worked out the way it did. If I had known then what I know now, I would have done it sooner. You know, I would have made that choice, ripped the Band-Aid off, you know, a year earlier, 10 years earlier. And so, you know, lucky for all of us, lucky for you for sure, that this all works out. And I know it has nothing to do with luck. I know it's a lot of hard work. But you mentioned that your dad has a big spa. So obviously he was able to take his $6 and make them into far, far more dollars than six and build something really cool. So how much of that, you know, as you think about looking at your childhood and then going into working in a hospital, I know now about myself that working for someone, I have to have a lot of power to work for someone. I'm not a good stand in line, take orders. You know, this is not the military. I can't handle that. I have to have a lot of power because I want to make decisions and I want to work autonomously and, you know, that kind of thing. Because my dad had companies. I mean, my dad was an entrepreneur and that's just how I was raised. Like, whatever you do, you eat what you kill, you make your own way. How much of that impacted how you thought about your future after this whole thing happened of like, I got to have my own thing because I've watched it unfold and I've seen how it changed our lives, you know, long term.
It's interesting. So growing up, my dad had multiple jobs. So he worked, you know, as a dishwasher, a janitor in a restaurant. Then he became the chef and, you know, he chopped like salads and things like that. And then he became a taxi driver. And then he worked in a sweatshop. And then he decided to open up a spa in the city. And so he was always like very innovative. And I saw that. And he failed a lot of times. He failed a lot of times and he started over many, many times. So I always understood the idea of if something doesn't work out, right, you get rejection, it's just redirection into something else. And so when this all happened, I was never one that, you know, made my own schedule and very extroverted, like you are innately, right? I am, you know, a people pleaser. I am a tell me what to do and I'll do it really well, right? And as a resident, that's what you're taught to do. That's actually what you're bred to do as a physician at this time, you know, in these days. And so I never wanted any of this entrepreneurship, this boss mentality, this, you know, my name on the door. I never wanted any of that. But when I had my strong why, and when my why became so strong, that's when everything changed. After a month of like sitting on the bathroom floor crying, I feel like we've all had moments where like crying on the bathroom floor. After a month of that, I had to pick myself up. I was going to have a second baby. My first child was born at 30 weeks early because I was working so much in the hospital. I was told to stay off my feet, but I didn't listen because I'm thinking, I got to just work. I got to see these patients. Who's going to see my patients? Who's going to operate on these patients? Who's going to help these patients? You know, that was my priority at that time. And so when I had my child at 30 weeks and she was born with detached retinas and prematurely and needed lots of surgery even before she turned 40 weeks, which is actual, you know, age of full term, she had 8 surgeries. I had to fly her out, change multiple hospitals, ICUs, fly her out from the NICU to Michigan. I mean, just all these things that I went through. And I'm like, my second child, you know, after having 3 miscarriages in between, I'll tell you a quick story. When I had my miscarriage, and nobody ever talks about this, but in medicine and especially in surgery, you know, I didn't want to be late for my surgeries because I had like 5 cases that day that I need to operate on. In between my first and second case, I would go to the clinic and get my D&C and then go right back to work. Like that's how crazy things were. And so just to answer your question, like it wasn't until I realized everything that I've done, everything I've sacrificed, everything that has come up until now, wasn't worth it. And the most important thing is for me to take care of my family. And that's my why. And when your why is so powerful, no one can take that away from you. And you will then take your life into control and you will define your success. So ever since then, I said, you know what? Instead of crying every day because I was fired, I was so embarrassed. I've never been fired from anything my entire life. Like I said, I've always tried to be the top of everything that I did. But when that happened, I realized I need to flip the switch. And one of my friends said, girl, you became unleashed. And I was like, I like that. I like that word, unleashed, because something happens inside of each and every one of us when we're at that lowest point in our life, that defining moment where we're like, we got to flip that switch and we got to become unleashed and we got to, you know, get powerful. We got to up level and we got to take matters into our own hands and we have to make it happen because failure is not an option. There is no safety net after that. And once I realized that, and once I realized my power, once I realized I can do things on my own, I can make things happen, that's when things started to change.
So many powerful things. It's like a testimony. I love this idea of, you know, not rejection, but redirection. I've been fired from lots of things in my life, Dr. Lana, lots of things, because I am a bit of a disruptor. I like to be a high performer, but I'm also a bit of a, I rattle the cage a bit. I'm always unleashed or unhinged. I don't know which word it is that you want to use, but, and so I see the difference. You know, I see for me, the why has always been there, you know, just to trailblaze and do big things and like have an impact. And the thing about you in a surgery role, it's a one-to-one, right? It's you and the patient in the bed. It's all you can handle in that moment is that one patient. But now I think about what you can do in the scale of which you can touch people, you know, as a provider, not only for your patients, but also you're training people every day who are then treating their patients. Like you've just instantly, you know, 10x'd your reach I mean, just with this endeavor, I mean, it's crazy to think about that. Like, your ability to impact people and to have an influence is so much bigger now because you're, you know, it's like a train the trainer, right? You're teaching people who are teaching people and on and on and on and on. And so I think about, you know, being unleashed for you has helped the whole industry, right? It's helped all those who are training beneath you and learning from you. So to that point, you know, as you're going into aesthetics, you've been through this rigorous program. You've been through all this rigor with surgery and robotics and learning and, you know, all of the trauma that came with all of that. Now you enter into aesthetics where there's like nothing here, no structure. It's the wild, wild west. You look at training here and think, I mean, I would be thinking to myself, oh my gosh, like I've gone into, you know, another dimension. How is this shift for you, having been so reliant on education for so long, to come into our world, you know, 6-7 years ago, and things were not where they are today, and having to adapt?
I think for me, it was kind of very easy to adapt, which is crazy, because here I am, robotic, advanced lap endourology, and then I'm doing aesthetics. Mm-hmm. What I realized was that the mentality is all the same. As a, you know, as a surgeon, I was always an educator, loved educating. I received a full scholarship teaching anatomy in medical school, and I graduated the top of my class. And so I was always, you see one, you do one, you teach one. That's always how I've been. So when I took my first course of, you know, injectables, and I was like, you know, I didn't really get that much out of it. That's when I set out to really, create my own course. And that's how it happened. It was as quick as, you know what, I was, Tiffany, I was training before I even had any real patients, just because I know the technique, I know the anatomy, I've taught anatomy for so long. And then I realized I was really good at injecting. And because I'm a people pleaser, I feel like, you know, the most important thing and the one thing that you need to be successful in this business is to be so good at your craft. And you know this better than anybody, right? Be so good that they can't ignore you. When you're so good and you get such great results and you sell the transformation, not the product, not the injectable, but you're selling the transformation and people are coming to see me, that's when I thought to myself, there is something much more to this than what I originally thought, right? Because when people go into this, right, the academic urologists were like, oh, this is like about vanity. It's not important. And they're wrong. Aesthetics is so important because it helps to empower you. It helps you to feel your most confident self. One of my first patients, Tiffany, said to me, Dr. Lana, I actually get treated better at work. And that sunk in as the first time to say, oh my gosh, I'm actually changing lives, right? People are flying in to see me. And I'm like, as a urologist, they never flew in to see me, right? I felt so validated. So for me, I feel like it was pretty easy to kind of flip the switch and just go into aesthetics with all my heart. And I know that when you have heart and you have passion in something, the success will come, especially if you're really good at what you do and you're consistent and you got to put yourself out there. And I think in the beginning, I didn't have a lot of credibility. And we all know this. When you're starting out, you know, 5-6 years ago when I did, there's not a lot of credibility. But I was able to make my training program, my face training program, credible by having these amazing colleagues that I knew in plastics, you know, in aesthetics. That's how I met up with Dr. Hardik Soni, my partner in Face Med Store, e-commerce store, you know. So I think that a lot of it just has to do with, you know, how you position yourself to become that credible source, which takes a lot of time, effort, consistency, right? But it also comes out in your work. So that's really how I kind of switched and pivoted. I became a trainer before I even had patients. And that's why sometimes I'm like, I felt like an imposter because, you know, although I had these plastic surgeons teaching and training with me, I felt like my training, my way of teaching was very similar, you know, and a lot of people came afterwards and said, you know what, I want to take a training just with you, because you seem to know so much. And that's how we started building our aesthetics group. We built on Facebook, now what, about 30,000 aesthetic injectors in our Facebook group, because we created community. So that was one of the things that I did very early on, Tiffany. I created a community where people can come together, they can get mentorship. And I think that is something that I am so passionate about, is because once we had the community support one another, then I felt like, you know what, now I can really reach the masses and really help. And it's not just me, it's everybody else in that forum that's helping each other, mentoring each other, partnering with each other, asking the right questions, right? Because we've been through everything. We have that roadmap of success. So now we're just trying to, you know, help everybody else out. Once they learn the aesthetic injectable part and they feel super comfortable after leaving our program, now it's like, well, what's next? How do you start a business? How do you scale a business? How do you grow your business? So that's kind of how everything has evolved up until now.
Well, I think you get such a valid point there that people who learn the artistry or the technical skill of injecting, there's so much training for that, right? We just had a conference with 200 classes, you know, 99 CMEs, all about how to inject or do threads or skincare. You know, the technical part of our industry has really kept up, I think, in a big way. Of course, there are trainers who are maybe not as good, or there's trainings that's not, you know, the ROI is not there, or the ROE is not there. I think that we have, at least though, in a sense, really, we cling to the idea of like training people how to inject. What we forget to do is what you just mentioned, the business aspect, even the transition of your life going from, you know, I think about nurses, one day you're taking orders in the hospital and the next day you are in charge of everything, or you've never had a business before. And now you have to worry about patient experience and marketing and finance and HR and onboarding. And you know, it's like all the other parts of it that there is no blueprint for that if you've never been in this world. And I think about, you know, people like, you know, yourself, even those who've been here forever, like a Julie Bass Kaplan and Connie Brennan, these guys are, you know, without you guys teaching the new generation coming up, there are a lot of great injectors with failing businesses. You know, there are a lot of really skilled, talented injectors who want to own a business and they just can't make it work because no one's saying it's hard. If you're a mom, you're ready to give up your weekends, give up your evenings. You got to make payroll. Even if the business doesn't make any money, you've got to still cover all the paychecks. And no one really talks about, I think, the ugly side of it nearly enough. And I don't mean ugly in a bad way. I mean ugly in the fact that we just don't have a good blueprint for it. And so I think that's one of the biggest things that you do that contributes to the industry is like you help everybody kind of connect together and collaborate and really learn from each other. Like that's just a place I think we're still missing. We're just not doing enough there.
I love that. And I'll be honest with you. I think part of my success, honestly, is because just being a good person and helping each other out. I really do believe that if you give some value to other people with zero expectations, that it comes back to you tenfold. And I really do believe in that. I've seen that work, over and over again. And so I agree with you. There are a lot of, there's a lot of trained programs that I know that I specifically speak with the owners that say, you know what, we couldn't make it, in business. And therefore now we're training. I mean, that's really what they say to me. And so, you know, the thought is, you know, be a great injector, have the techniques, be open-minded to learn from anybody. You can always learn from somebody else. You can always pick up tricks and tips, whether it's business pearls, clinical pearls, technical pearls. You can always learn from somebody else. So I think part of the issue is that when someone doesn't have that open-mindedness to learn, I think that's where people start to fail, right? And so I'm always very open to learn from other people and to share with other people, to mentor other people, and to give guidance. And so for me, you know, when my, you know, physicians, my, you know, nurse injectors, PA injectors, even dental injectors see that not only am I doing good work and having people come from all over to get their injections done, but I'm also a successful business owner. We've expanded to 3 locations now and have scaled to 3 locations by the end of this year. So I think it's important that when you look for a trainer, to connect with a trainer, to know, you know, like their technique, but also just to, you know, go into the footsteps and learn and be in the same room with people who have done it already before you, so that you can get inspired to say, if that person's done it, they've shown me the way, they're going to mentor me, and now I'm going to get in the same room with that person. I'm going to level up and I'm going to learn from that person. And I think that's the key to success, is when someone says, I see that person is doing their thing and I want to learn from that person, right? So like the kind of that abundance mentality, like let's learn and let's uplift each other, and let's support each other. And I think that has really added to a lot of the successes of us building our community and our group.
Yeah, it's interesting. When I met you, or when I heard about you for the first time, I called Heather Ipian, who's a dear friend of mine, another New Yorker. And I said, Heather, you know, who is this person? Is she any good? Is this all smoke and mirrors? Because, you know, now you don't know if it's real or not. You have to actually call. She's like, oh, no, she's the real deal. Great skill. You know, she had such great things to say about you. And I think that's part of it as well. If someone is your advocate who will open the door for you, who will sit in a table, you know, we discuss this a lot. If they're in a room and you're not, and they'll speak your name in good faith and talk about the good things that you've done, in this industry, if nowhere else, it's so important. Because I think about vendors, even like the conference, when I find out who wants to speak at Aesthetic Next, if I don't know them, I call someone. I'll call you from now and say, hey, if you train this person, are they any good? Or do you know about them? Do they actually have a legitimate business that is, you know, profitable and doing ethical, good, you know, things with integrity? You don't know, right? You see Instagram, you see this like pretty picture everyone's highlighting, you know, their great moments in their life and their best B&A on the Instagram reel, not the five that were not so good before. And you just don't know. So I think part of it is when you get these networked communities, you can really find your tribe who will speak on your behalf, who will help you to open doors, to get places, to be in rooms, especially as a gain trainer or an allergan trainer. You know, they'll tell the reps, hey, this person is great. Go see them. They should be a trainer as well. I feel like that's how things get done. It's just like politics has been doing for 100 years, you know, a couple hundred years. It's who you know and how, you know, how you interface with people that really dictates your success, because you cannot do this alone. You just cannot be on an island in aesthetics, I think now, at least in this day and age, and survive, because you just need to have partners. You got to have people, you know, on both sides of you in your community, across the country, who are there to help you, mentor, and even mentor you. Even when you're at the top of your game, there's still blind spots for all of us. And I think about that too with you. You know, as I watch you in the conference, you have a whole media team following you around. You have fantastic injectors. You know, you had one with you at the conference. How do you decide what things you want to do and what things you want to farm out? Because I think part of being a great business owner is saying, I don't like doing that. I don't want to do that. It's not my skill set. I'm going to farm that out to somebody else. I'm going to delegate that out. And how do you decide where to spend your, you know, spend the core of your time when you're growing your business?
Well, first of all, I just want to say I loved the Aesthetic Next conference, because you only, not only did you highlight people that had already been, you know, highlighted, that are kind of in the in crowd, you know, we talk about like the cool crowd, right? It's like, you know, it's outsiders looking in. I feel like I'm one of the outsiders looking in. I was like, always like, oh my gosh, wouldn't it be amazing? Like my goal is to be on stages with these amazing, you know, injectors. But your Aesthetic Next conference was, you were able to highlight, you know, the top of the top, you know, people have been in the business and in the industry for so long, but also like the people that are less known, you know, or the people that are coming in. So just you being able to give us a platform, a chance for us to, you know, talk about who we are and inspire and do other things and, you know, hopefully help to educate other people. I mean, that's number one, amazing. So thank you to you and what you put together to allow all these injectors and all these, you know, inspiring people to be on your stages, whether they are well known or whether they're just coming in because they're finally able to break out, you know, of being scared and scared to be, you know, unseen and really putting themselves and their visibility out there. So thank you so much for doing that. And then just to answer your question, I would say the most important thing to become successful is because we can't be at all places at all times, right? So you bring value to the table, then you train. Since I'm a trainer, I train all these people. And Christina, my main trainer now, she actually trains all these people because I've invested in her and she's invested in me. We've invested in each other. She's now become my main trainer, where people are like, oh, I want to get, you know, to go to Dr. Lana's face training program. But now it's not even just getting training from me, it's getting training from them. So you uplift these people, you build these people up, right? Because in order to be successful, in order to scale, you got to build your team around you in order for you to scale. And that's the most important lesson that I've learned, is you got to delegate to elevate, but you really need a very strong team to get you to that next level, that echelon that you were talking about. And once you're able to do that, then you can sit back a little bit because you've already delivered the value, you already have the credibility, the influence, the authority, so that you have that branding. And all you need to do is just get the good people that do all the hard work to now work on your behalf, because they see your mission, they believe your mission, and they're super loyal. And that's the most important thing. And you'll see that too. And you've seen that too. We've talked about this, is really having a team that sees your vision and able to implement it. As visionaries that you and I are, it's important to find those integrators that are able to really take your vision to the next level.
I want to follow you around for a whole day and just take in all your great sayings. You have to delegate to elevate. I mean, that's a damn good one too. You've got all the goods. But Christina was fantastic. I mean, and I will say, she's such an advocate for you. We've DM'd each other. I mean, she was so sweet. The minute the conference was over, she sent a really nice thank you note to me. Just like, you know, she appreciated the opportunity and, you know, spoke highly about you and what you were able to do at the conference and just bringing it all together. I thought, you know, somebody who's either their parents raised them right or their boss has raised them right to send a thank you note and really, you know, have such regard for what we're trying to deliver and then want to deliver it, you know, on our behalf. Like, she wanted to do great for us, just like you did, which I think is always a big part of it. Is like, it, again, we're all in this together. And if education is the end goal, people who are on stage who want to educate, that's all I ever care about. It's like, if you want to educate, give someone a shot, give them their chance. Let, you know, you got to shoot your shot, as they say, but you got to be able to get on the court. And I think in our industry, we've done a disservice to so many of the great injectors who aren't big yet to say, when you get big, we'll let you in. Well, how do they ever get big? It's like having a job, you know, until you get experience, you can't have the job. Well, how do I ever get experience if I can't get a job? It's like the chicken and the egg issue. And I think what you mentioned about your team is so critical. I think about that here all the time, is the team is so bought into our mission, and they're so bought into, like, our end goal here is patient outcomes, right? If you have technology that works, it's easier to have great patient outcomes. And if they don't fit, get rid of them. If they're not part of your mantra, your value system, your core beliefs, your vision, they gotta go. And I've made some bad hires. We've had, you know, many, I'm sure over the course of time, you've made some as well. And you gotta think about that. Like, if it's not elevating, to your point, if it's not elevating the business and they're a detraction from what you're trying to accomplish, they gotta go. So even thinking about that, I mean, you have a really awesome core team. How do you figure out who to hire, who fits your mode, and who, you know, how do you get them to be believers and to stay on with you for so long?
That's a great question. And I'd probably love to ask you too, but I'm going to tell you my secret is that because I'm a trainer, people are coming to train with us. And so I know within the first 5 minutes of meeting them, whether or not they're going to be successful. A good trainee is someone who takes direction really well, who listens, who doesn't get offended, who really wants to genuinely learn, someone that has that passion. And you know what I'm talking about, Tiffany, because you know when someone's going to be successful, or who the successful people are in the room, you can pick them up very easily. I've become so good at that in the first 5 minutes, I can tell who I want on my team and so forth. And the people that I have on my team are not people that I go after, not people that I am constantly bombarding, hey, do you want to join our team? It's those people who take it upon themselves to show me their value, show me their loyalty, show me what they can bring to the table over and over and over again. And that's what Christina did for me. She took my course like over 2 years ago. And ever since she took my course, she showed up every single day. How can I help you, et cetera, et cetera. She would do things for free just to be in our vicinity, just to be, you know, hang out with us. And so I know that she's shown who she is. And that is the most important thing. When you see people and they're doing and they're giving value without any expectations back, just like how I talked about doing that as well for other people, helping other people. She is very similar to me. We help other people with zero expectations back. And when I realize that she's very similar, and then when I realize that she is so loyal and all she does is try to elevate the people around her, I'm like, she has to be on my team. So she asked me if she can join my team. And I said, absolutely. And that was after 2 years of her showing, you know, herself, her being visible to me, her being available, providing value, you know, doing all the things. She took my training program, Tiffany, to a whole nother level, because I'm not good with, you know, the everyday tasks. I'm not good as an organizer. You mentioned traction. I'm not a good integrator, but she is. So part of being successful is finding those people who are better than you, who are smarter than you, who can do things better than you, and making sure that they see your vision and they're crystal clear with your vision and that their vision aligns with yours. And if that, all those things happen, right, then you've got a team member for life. And now Christina's become my partner, because together we're stronger, together we can scale. And that's how that worked out. So,
yeah, I think, you know, here my whole thing is you got to be a builder. I mean, to what you said with Christina, you got to be a builder. We look for things in our team, like, you know, it's like these little nuggets that you find, these little pockets of genius or hustle or innate desire to do better that, you know, you find them. I don't care what you've done before. I don't really care about your experience. I don't care if you have the hard skills when you come in. My only hard skills, you have to be able to work technology, right? You have to be very tech savvy, because everything we do here is technology. But we hire people who have no skill set at all in the thing that we're hiring them for, but they have an innate aptitude for it. And some you can see in some other job, for instance, teachers. If you're a school teacher, you're going to be a great coach for our software. We know it because you know how to look at, you know, a curriculum and check in with the learner. And you can, you know, when they get frustrated, you can help them through that. Because you're a school teacher, right? It's, we just find people who are like that. But I'll give a shout out to my media team who's helping us right now. This was nothing when we started. AM Productions was nothing. We had literally nothing. And the guy that I hired for a whole different job had a passion for it and a great skill set for it and a desire to build it. And we now have, you know, cameras and lights in the studio. We do paid work for clients, for big injection companies and big, you know, big skincare companies, because he had a dream to do it and a desire. And all he needed was a little bit of parameters around it to help with structure and funding and resources and, you know, the things that you need to do as a business owner. But I didn't build any of it. You know, I'm here for kind of here for the ride to help from a leadership perspective. But I think when you hire people who want to build things either for you, with you, or, you know, even despite you in some cases, that's what you want. And so I think here for us, our successes have been really about people who want to build something. And, you know, we hire them very young here, oftentimes young without professional experience. This is like their first big kid job. That's always fun to watch as well, to watch them kind of mature and blossom and develop. But I get it. Like, they got to be on the bus with you. And if you wouldn't hire 10 more of them, they're not the right person for your team. If you wouldn't rehire them in the morning, they can't stay, because it just, I think the worst thing for a high performer is to have a low performer in the midst, bring everybody down. You got to, you know, Blue Angels, I love the whole Blue Angels flight team. You know, you got to be, we all have to be at the top 1% of our game, or else we all suffer. So I agree with you 100%.
Love that. Hire someone with grit. I feel like it's like the immigrant mentality. Like, we're all grateful to be here, and anything that you give me, I'm going to take it. I'm going to run with it. You know, that grit, that hustle mentality. I see that a lot in my, my injector moms, you know, that have children, because that's their why. And so they just know that they have to, you know, they have to go and get it. I'll tell you, one of the people that I've trained over 6 years ago, she's taken multiple of my training courses. She has such grit, and she is not giving up. And even when she was like faced with almost bankruptcy, she did not give up, you know. And that's also Hardik's Sony story too. He was almost faced with bankruptcy. And I feel like it's those people who don't give up, even in the face of bankruptcy, and say, I'm going to do it. Those people, you know, the tenacious people, and you've talked about that, but those people with the grit and the hustle and that say, no, I'm not giving up, those are the people that can take us to the next level. So if you can find those people, amazing.
Yeah, if you can find them, hire them right now, or send them to me or Dr. Lana. We'll take them. We'll take them off your hands for sure. Well, I want to dig in just for a quick second, though, about your practice and about patients and patient outcomes. You have this celebrity facelift, which I had no idea what it actually even entailed until the day you did it on stage, because it's so beautifully branded as a thing. You know, you don't say, I'm going to give you a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little bit of this. You just say it is a celebrity facelift. You know, it is a thing all on its own, and I'll give you whatever you need in that moment. I'm not going to give you a predetermined amount of something. We talk a lot on this show about having a proprietary method. Our good friend Katie Lindham helped us with that, who's a genius, by the way, but really thinking about your business model and what you want to be known for. So how did you settle on that? I think full face correction obviously is the, you know, the bee's knees, but how did you really determine your brand element and like how that became your, now you're known for that. Like, how's that your thing now? I mean, it's like on a billboard, that's your face is on it. Celebrity facelift. How'd you pick that thing out of a crowd?
When I was starting in this business, I actually was very good at tear trough fillers. And I realized that in order to get to be famous in this industry, you focus on that one thing that makes it your niche, right? And so there's amazing injectors, lips, you know, Julie Horn, Dr. Dulce. So really great with lips. And I was like, well, if I'm going to be known for something, I don't want it just to be about one thing. I want it to be about the whole face. So 5 years ago, I coined the celebrity non-surgical facelift because I wanted people to come in feeling that not only celebrities get to look like this, but we also had people coming in and said, I want to look like this and this celebrity. And so I was like, all right, well, here's a chance for us to feel like we're celebrities because we look, you know, and feel the part, and that confidence is just built because of the whole face rejuvenation. And like I said before, you really want to focus on the transformation, not what products you're using. So if we do get people asking, you know, how much for a lip filler, right? Well, we really want to give you a full consultation that you deserve so that we can see what the best balance is for your face, right? So let's talk about your goals. Let's talk about your concerns, your aesthetic concerns, but more importantly, your aesthetic goals and how we can get you there. And so when you sell the transformation, when you tell people the transformation, when they're seeing the befores and afters with a full face transformation, with thread lifts for, you know, lifting, with fillers for that volumization, that lost collagen, and, you know, Sculptra, if you're, you know, your skin, you have skin laxity with Morpheus, you know, you're selling everything and people want the finished product. It's like when you buy a house, you're not going to ask, Well, how much is each nail? How much is, you know, each board, right? You want that staged finished product. And so that's kind of what, you know, I focused on is that finished product. And if you want that finished product and you want the transformation, that's what you're paying for. The skill of the transformation and not just one filler here, one Juvederm, one Restylane. And so that's how things, you know, came about. But I was actually really known for my tear trough fillers. And then it went to kind of full face.
Well, and you are a Dr. Doan graduate, aren't you, in Atlanta? I mean, she's got all kinds of interesting things. But I feel like you went to her to shadow with her, didn't you?
I didn't. No. But I know her well. She uses our cannulas on Face Med Store. She's a huge proponent of Face Med Store. But no, I've never met her in real life. She is fabulous. And she does the whole face. But yeah, I've never been to her course before, but she's amazing. I would suggest anyone go.
Well, you have a very similar mantra. Like, it has to be everything. She's also the same vein of like, you can't just do your lips. You got to do the whole thing. And her big thing is a chin shadow. You know, that's her tear trough, right? It's a chin shadow. But I think about all of you who are really thinking through that of, we've got to give a finished product now to patients. We can't give this onesie twosie thing. I mean, I think in a recession, as we are kind of entering into, we will go back to that, unfortunately, probably more than we should, about this onesie-twosie, because it is about the syringe. People think about the price of things. But to give someone an out-of-the-door, you know, walking out on the street looking like a full transformation, no matter what it took to get there, I think that is such a where we need to be going, right? When you go get get a breast aug, when you get a facelift done, you're not asking about, I want you to cut here, here, and here. It's like, no, I'm going to give you a facelift. I'm going to do the whole freaking thing. I'm going to give you what you need. You're paying to go under the knife. I'm going to give you a great result. Yeah, I think it's only in our industry that we really nickel and dime around what we're using. I think I always use an example about like a knee implant. No one says, I want the Stryker knee implant. They said, just make me walk again. I just want to walk. Whatever you have to do, doctor, to find my, you know, the right knee implant for me or knee replacement for me, just go do it. But here we're like, we want the Juvederm one, the Juvederm Ultra, you know, 2.2 cc's of that if we can, because my friend gets that. It's just such a weird thing here that I don't know how we started there, but we are here. So we have to push our patients out of that, I think. And you're doing it really well with the celebrity facelift. But you also do a lot of threads. You do all kinds of things. But you also have the whole Face Med Store. So give me a little bit of an idea of what that is, because that's a whole different, I mean, e-commerce is like a different animal. And you guys are crushing it with that as well. You have, you know, you just mentioned Dr. Doan, big names using your products. How do you keep all that going with everything else you have going on?
It's funny. Once I realized that I can create this community on Facebook to help each other out, very early on, we realized that there's so much power in just numbers. And so if we banded together, we could actually get GPO pricing, right? Repurchasing organization pricing for a lot of things. We actually at one point had a GPO with Allergan. But you know, that was probably our biggest GPO when it comes to injectables. But then as we went along, you know, everybody needed things. So, okay, fine, let's get a GPO with Henry Schein. So we were getting people 50% off things just by being in our group and mentioning our names. And then we said, you know what? Let's take it another step further, because we created this huge Facebook group and we already have the community. And we said, well, why don't we go ahead and source out the things that we use in our practices that we know are good, and at a fraction of the cost that everyone's paying for them separately, why don't we buy in bulk and then pass on the savings to our members? And that's how Face Med Store got started. It was never a, hey, let's open up an e-commerce store. No, it was, we already had the community and they were all like, well, where do I get this? How do I get this for cheaper? You know, what about lasers? You know, how much is that? And so having the power of knowledge and having the power of people banding together in a group like this is so helpful when it comes to getting better pricing. As we all know, hospitals do it all the time. And so that's actually how Face Med Store came about. We bought things in bulk so that we could have a savings for ourselves and make more ROI, and then passing on those savings to our friends and our colleagues on our group.
Yeah, I think the vendors are finally learning to play ball. You know, the vendors have been pushing back for years, especially pharmaceutical vendors, of like, we don't want to do GPOs. It's not, you know, it's against our model. Like, but that's how we all work. I mean, that's how the world works. The more you buy, the cheaper it gets. I mean, we look at, you know, all these programs like Ally and Aspire and, you know, even the Prolinium program experience with MERS, the more you buy, the cheaper it gets. So what is the harm in us kind of banding together, I guess, as a group, you know, as the GPO, and saying, we're going to guarantee the buy. We're going to guarantee a level for you every year if you just give us an option to go in together. And so I think they're getting a little bit more understanding of it. When I was at Galderma, it was like a huge issue. You know, don't do it. It's not what we want to do. You know, obviously the chain of command kind of gets muddled between who is the rep and who's the provider and who's the actual physician on site. Anyway, long story short, I think we're getting around that, hopefully. But I think it's genius because if you're a new injector coming in, you're like, where do I buy things? Like, what do I even need to buy, right? If I'm for the first time ever owning a business, I have no idea what I need, where to go get it. I'm paying rack rates, which is, I mean, exponentially more in many cases if you're paying the rack rate for something. And you're already out of money because you're trying to start a business. It's like bad timing for all the things in the beginning. That this, I think, really cuts through a lot of the financial strain and helps people to get what they need at a price they can afford and to get the right things that you've obviously vetted and that you know think are the right devices, right threads, right everything. So I commend you for doing it because I think it's a huge need.
Thank you. I mean, our mission as we grow, and I know you had asked, you know, what the next step was, what's next on the docket, is really providing that kind of all-in-one solution to someone who goes from starting a med spa to scaling a med spa to the exit strategy. And I know we talk a lot about, you know, Face Med Store as an e-commerce, but we're also connecting with, a lawyer who we have to help with all the legal documentation, I think is so important. We have finance people that can help. We have marketing people that can help. So, you know, our next goal is to build this global platform where everyone can come together and get access to the best people in the field that can help you open up your med spa with the least amount of overhead as possible, get all the financial documents, get all the legal documents, and then get the starter kit, the scaling kit, the business consulting, all the things. That is our goal, and that is our mission for the next chapter of our lives. And so I'm so excited to, you're probably one of the first people that we're talking to about this as our goal. But sometimes I feel like you put it out in the universe, you say the things that you want, and that manifestation, you know, idea, you say it, you put it out there. I can't take it back anymore. I've already said it, Tiffany. So we got to do it. We got to build this global platform. And that's what our next goal is, for everyone to come to us for anything that they need, from mentorship to business help to legal to, e-commerce needs, et cetera.
Well, you put it out there and I'm grabbing on because I've had this idea. Leslie Tracy and I have been toying around with it for a long time. I won't divulge it here on the interwebs, but I think what you just said is a perfect compliment to it. So you and I need to talk at some point soon because I have an idea that could take what you just said and help get that solidified in a really cool way. So we need to definitely, you're right, put it out there. You never know what you'll hear back, but I'm already thinking.
We'll talk about all the time. It's like you say the things that you want. You never know who's listening because there are people who can, you know, who can collaborate with you to get you there and vice versa. You never know.
Yeah, ask what you want. But yeah, you know, I wanted to talk a little about sexual wellness today, but I had a thought on the way in this morning. Is I'm going to put our entire panel on the podcast this season as an episode. So we're going to go deep into our whole sexual wellness panel that we had at Aesthetic Next because it was so good. You're one of our panelists, along with a few others who do sort of regenerative medicine, functional medicine, sexual wellness all day long. But that is a big part of your practice. I'm sure you're obviously an expert in that part of it. But as we kind of wrap up here, just in a quick little mindset, I am curious from your perspective as you train, why do you think people aren't doing that in their practice yet? Why we're slow to roll and kind of adopt this idea of sexual wellness, sexual health? Because obviously we're women, we need it, men as well. It's a huge attractor for men into practice. And obviously you've worked in a very intimate setting with this because you've done it for so long. But how do I get the average injector who's listening to this podcast to understand the value and the benefit long-term to bringing that into their practice?
I think it's such a great question, Tiffany. I mean, sexual health, women's sexual health, $32 billion industry, $32 billion in women's sexual health. That's how much money is spent on healthcare for women every single year. And for men, the numbers go even higher, right? And so what we're seeing really is that transition. You know, people are going to urologists for all the things that they need for sexual health, but to be very honest, urologists were never really taught to help with women's sexual health. We were taught to treat low testosterone, we were taught to treat male ED. We were never taught enhancement, and we were never taught how to take care of women's sexual health needs. I mean, up until recently, it's a DSM-4 criteria. Women with sexual health issues, you know, they're considered, you know, crazy. So there's such a stigma of women's sexual health where people are just not really interested in talking about it yet. But I feel like that has gone down the drain. That was in the past. That was, you know, the old mentality, the old way of thinking. And I think that those who are successful are going to adapt this very quickly, because in the next 5 years, you are going to see an explosion of not only functional medicine providers, but more people looking for that enhancement. Because what do people want? People want to be optimized. They want peak performance. They want peak sexual performance. They want to live longer. They want to live healthier. So it's that whole change. And it could be because, you know, after COVID, it kind of woke people up to say, you know what? I want now, instead of just going to the doctor when things are bad, when I need surgery, when medication is not going to cut it. But now I want that preventative sexual issues. I want that preventative aging. So I'm going to go to that doctor who's going to do all the things, not just aesthetics, but really to help with optimization of your sexual health. So I think that that's going to be the next biggest thing in the industry. And we're already seeing a lot of it being done in a lot of practices, and even plastic surgeons and dermatologists doing a lot of female sexual health. And so as a urologist, I would love to help pioneer this movement to get everybody trained and educated to the point where they're delivering good, exceptional care, but knowing all the technology out there that can be done, asking the right questions, and giving the patients the right expectations of what can be done for them. Because people are talking, if you ask a lot, you know, an intake form, how many people actually have urinary leakage? So many, they just don't realize that there's something other than surgery that can help them with these ailments. And I think once we get that education out there, it's gonna happen. So that's my hope for the future, the next 5 years, to be able to educate everybody on the things that we do for sexual health. And I'm gonna learn too, Tiffany, because there's so much out there that it's developing. I'd love to talk with the panel some more to see what we can bring on. So it's all a, you know, collaboration of really helping that patient become their most optimal peak self.
Yeah, I think aesthetics is leading the way, because you look at like J-Lo, she's 50. The 50-year-olds a generation ago were the golden girls. You know, she looks like a freaking snack, and she's 50, looks amazing. Of course she wants to keep having sex and having a great, you know, feeling young and not having urinary incontinence and being a vibrant 50-year-old, because she looks incredible. I think our generation, as we've all kind of adopted the aesthetic idea earlier in our lives, obviously the Kardashians helping in many ways to lead that path, but we're going to look great in our 60s and our 70s. We want to still be active and vibrant, and I think if you're giving someone that ability to look amazing as they age, but not giving them the ability to be, you know, sexually empowered and feel great in that regard, it's almost like you're doing a disservice, right? If you're going to give them one, you got to give them the other. You can't give them the poison and not the antidote. So I think there is a part, more of a revolution, if you want to call it that, that's coming for our entire industry as we think about this anti-aging long term. It's part of it. I mean, it's just as much part of being female as, you know, how my lips look and my cheeks look, if not more so, frankly. But I think what you're doing with that is incredible. I can't wait to see what comes next. And guys, the panel will come out in a few more episodes. You got to listen to it. It's so, so good. It's about all regenerative medicine, but really a big part of it focuses on sexual health. So what's next for you as we wrap up here? How do we find you? What are your credentials to on Instagram and Patreon and all the places to go to learn from you?
Definitely Dr. Lana on Instagram, DrLana. That's where you can see all my work and, you know, anything that I can talk about to help inspire and empower you. I am on Patreon at Dr. Lana as well, spelled out. I'm on Facebook group. It's called the Aesthetic Medicine and Wellness Group. And there's one for PAs, NPs, nurses, et cetera, and of course, physicians as well. And I think that's really the main places. I'm on TikTok. I don't think I do very well on TikTok, but my ex-boyfriend, my first boyfriend from like grade school, found me on TikTok. So I think I'm doing something right on TikTok. But, you know, all the things, Dr. Lana. And, you know, for the future, we're expanding. We're going into our third location. And just really excited about the growth, the scaling, and to create this global platform that, you know, we already are working on. And I think that's going to be amazing for not only a marketplace, but also a one-stop shop to everything that you need, from legal to marketing to finance and all the things, and even mindset coaching. So really excited for all those things to come into play, Tiffany. And maybe we're going to do some more amazing things in the future. I'll definitely be at Aesthetic Next again next year. It was such an amazing time. And thank you for all you do for all of us.
Well, you're so welcome. And if you guys are looking for her training calendar, it's on her website. You can see all the trainings she has upcoming to register for those. You can also find out how to get to Face MedStore from her website. You can learn more about what she's doing and all of her write-ups. By the way, she was in Forbes not that long ago with a contribution to an article there. So you can keep up with Dr. Lana on her website for sure, but definitely Instagram and the Facebook group. I want to go join the Facebook group. Like I'm compelled to go figure out what all kind of great details are being shared there that I want to know about. But thank you for coming to Aesthetic Next and for sharing and injecting on stage. Thank you for coming today. And yeah, I look forward to hopefully some big collaborations. And I'm coming to New York to see you because I'm fascinated by your story and, you know, the whole immigration as a child, just all of it, Brown, everything you've done, I think is just really fascinating. Congratulations on a very successful transition and what I think will be a very long, illustrious career that does not involve anybody paying you less than you're worth. So kudos on that part for sure.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Dr. Tiffany. I can't wait to see you in New York and let's crush it together.
Yeah. Well, I'll see all of you guys next week with another episode of For the Record. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to another episode of For the Record. This podcast is not intended to provide legal or medical advice. It's for entertainment, education, and information purposes only. For more information on this week's guest or to get started with Aesthetic Record, email us at info@aestheticrecord.com. Be sure to tune in next week for more fresh perspectives on disrupting the status quo and surviving in the aesthetics industry.